All right, we're back.
Hey, welcome to a new edition of the Mahoning Movement Show.
How you doing, bud?
Doing pretty good. How you doing, Joe?
Good. Last couple shows, you kind of took point on it. You did amazing with your interviews. So
thank you.
Great job.
I got to
be like passive for once, sit in the background, right?
Yeah, trying to learn some interviewing skills, you know. But yeah, there were some fun shows, good people on. Unfortunately, Trina Williams and Dan Martini had to reschedule for today. So I figure we might as well just talk about like Youngstown State University and the humanities programs there. I don't know if you saw, but there's a petition going around to save the English master's program. And I'm not an English person. I barely speak it, but it's like the MFLA of, I don't know if it's just English in general masters or if it's a specific literature one, but there's some really great people in the English program and faculty at YSU. For instance, Chris Barzak and Karen Schubert. I don't know if she actually teaches at YSU. I think she does, but you know, she's the ringleader of Youngstown Lit, and they just did a conference downtown that had brought a lot of people in, and it was cool. I got to pedicab for that. I volunteered to pedicab and got to take a special guest around on that. So they're fighting to save the English master's program, but also some of the other humanities programs are on the cut. I'm actually going to be one of the final students to go through the American Studies master's program, which is unfortunate because I think it's a really awesome program. I mean, it's not going to be the end of the world, though, because the history master's kind of covers a lot of that ground. But I'm really fortunate to be when the students actually get to take that program. Daniel Rauschenbach, too, is going through that program, and we're trying to convince him to finish it up before it's all over. So I just figured we'd talk a little bit about the humanities at YSU and nothing specific, but so the overall concept of the show is we're talking about the active transportation trails, but doing the history of transportation in the area and advocating for active transportation to connect the Stavage bike trail to the Ravenna bike trail, doing the history along the way, but also advocating for the active transportation because it's good for our community. And so what kind of really helped form that, you know, what I've formed that project, because it's always something I've been interested in, but really actually combining with what I'm learning at YSU on it was really this program, the American Studies program, and especially the Applied History program, which the future of that's kind of uncertain as well. My main professor up at YSU, Dr. Tom Leary, is going to be retiring after the spring semester. So just really want to help advocate that these humanities programs are really important, not just for the students who go through them, but for our entire Youngstown community. You know, like I said, people like Chris Barzak and various professors, Dr. Jacob Lebenz, and professors who are important not just within the classroom, but also with being members of our community, you know, both people that are from here and people who came in to teach at YSU. So I just figured we'd chat a little bit about that.
Yeah. And you know, for those of you who haven't watched the show, you know, Jacob and I spoke a bunch of times leading up to this. And, you know, from your perspective, I really do value the fresh perspective and the culture perspective that you've brought even to me. I mean, I'm a, you know, libertarian capitalist. And so to hear the ideas of people who might, disagree or have different opinions about this, I've never looked at some of these perspectives before. And it's kind of fresh to be able to like put them through the Jacob filter, you know what I mean, when doing that. And I'm telling you, the flavor of business that I got with the downtown area and the people that are more connected and with those cultural veins, it's been eye-opening. And there's some stuff I still yet don't quite understand. So like, you know, I'm a pragmatist, meritocracy. Mm-hmm. And so when you come from like, you know, the academic studies in, you know, the humanists or those more cultural finesse types of things, like when you start, when the marketplace starts to devalue some of the humanities and don't find a practical use for them in a commercial world, why don't you explain like the usefulness or the angle on it and why?
Sure.
Go ahead.
You are kind of like Bill Gates, Steve Jobs. You're a tech entrepreneur, and I mean you're much more than that as well. Don't get me wrong, but you come from that perspective. And I respect that a lot. Like you mentioned, like you didn't bother to finish college because you went right in to start your business. You knew what you wanted to do. And that's great for people like you. And there's people that if you want to make money and just get, you know, have a decent living, you're better off going into the trades than going into college, like become an electrician and plumber or something like that. Cause it's jobs that can't be outsourced, and it's interesting work overall. Like actually I'm lucky, having the building down the street, because those kind of practical trades like things I kind of had to learn on my own going along. And it's been, I've kind of gotten so much of my education in life over the past 10 years of having that building. So there's like so many different avenues you could take. So college and, you know, getting a master's in the humanities, yeah, it's not for everyone in a way, or it is for everyone who wants to do it, you know what I mean? But it's not the only path to take. That you got to figure out what your passion is. And but for people that are looking for like a passion, that are interested in things like that, it's a great thing to do. And
well, but I would always process with it when you go to academics and get a college degree, it's so that you're going to be using it as a utility in some kind of profession, you know what I mean? And so when there aren't a profession that's connected to some kind of academic pursuit, that's where you start losing me. Like, what's the pursuit then? You know what I mean?
What's the pursuit?
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. And that's, I mean, if you want,
let's go philosophical, like, yeah,
exactly.
Baby.
I mean, it's in there about the pursuit of happiness, which is interesting. You know, originally they wanted pursuit of property, but then they realized, well, that's a little cold, you know, especially their idea of property at the time, which was messed up. So pursuit of happiness, a little fluffy, but, I really think that's what it comes down to. You know, if we want to get into the philosophical thing, you know, Marx said, from each according to their ability, to each according to their need. Society always needs artists and the shaman to some degree. You know what I mean?
Well, let me give you this example. So as a kid, I never really had an appreciation for art. Like, we had Butler up here. We have these great, and I liked that they gave exposure to it, but I thought, you know, that's not ever anything I'm going to pursue. I don't see a, you know, potential in it. And as I got older, then I sort of like gained an appreciation. So I was glad that there were people that were fighting on behalf of pictures, you know, mm-hmm. painted old school pictures that they're here, mm-hmm. but it took me a while to develop that appreciation.
And that's, you know, like we said, you're an entrepreneurial innovator. So was Joseph G. Butler Jr. You know, his role in the steel industry, you know, I think he didn't necessarily start off, you know, he didn't start off wanting to create an art museum. He started off in iron and steel and was a great administrator of that. And of course made some money in that. And so that's how he kind of on art. So you need benefactors to some degree too,
right.
At least in our current society, in right. terms of capitalist society, where we're dependent upon, which I don't think it necessarily should be like that. I think there should be other avenues to make sure that artists get paid. I think one of the most important areas and times in our history was during the Great Depression, when Roosevelt put through like the WPA and stuff, and you had the government, and believe me, I'm not overall big fan of government in general, but at that you need a certain organization to society. And during the Great Depression, you need to have programs to make sure people could eat and also be productive and what they're best at. And you had artist programs and so many great murals in this country, and also sidewalks and infrastructure were done during that time. So yeah, and that's a whole, I guess we got on kind of tangent about
right.
like how society needs to value history, culture, and art, and how do you make sure the people who do that can at least eat, but should also, you know, be able to flourish.
Yeah, and having that sort of the ability to take an intrinsic value in something, and not just, because it's not going to apply to everybody who say the art should be here because it creates happiness or creates a pursuit that's fulfilling for the artist, but having sort of like a practical use for that. You know what I mean?
It has a value to society overall beyond
right.
the artist, you know, and that's, I could take it on a whole another direction about how the art, how the art goes beyond the artist, but also
right.
in a time of, which I think rightfully so to some degree of like cancel culture, where some people should be kind of canceled in a way, but the art does have its own intrinsic value, no matter how bad the person was, or even if it's dated to a degree, it has a place. Now, I think monuments to Confederates don't have a place in the middle of a public square in society, but in terms of art itself, I think they should at least not be necessarily destroyed, but moved into an area, maybe reinterpreted in a way where you deal with the reality situation instead of glorifying someone. But the artifact itself does have its own value regardless of what's happening. Does that make sense in a way? But that's my take on the whole
okay.
monument, if we want to get in that debate.
Right.
But when you have public squares, that belongs to all of the people. And when you're glorifying someone who, you know, who dehumanize people, you know, then it has no place in a public square. But the artifact itself belongs somewhere to some degree, but not Newton Falls. I thought it was the dumbest thing that, like, they wanted to, the mayor at the time or something wanted to bring in like canceled monuments or something for a public display. That seemed a little strange, but All right, okay. We've gone a bunch of tangents.
No, but that's it. That's good. That's what I like most about even sitting down a few times that we had discussions like this, is that I knew that we were going to have sort of countervailing opinions. And what's cool about it is I don't necessarily think like you and I need to go through the debate, but we can have more like a philosophical agreement on top of that. Like who should win when you get a push and pull? Like if you have people that disagree on it, like do you take something that you know somebody disagrees with and force it upon them? Or do you kind of let it create a balance between the two opposing forces? You know,
yeah,
we got really philosophical there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as long as someone's opinions aren't motivated by hate, like, you know, Nazis, it's not even worth talking to them. They, you know, they're idiots, you know, and it's, now, maybe some people you can win. I was just talking to some friends the other night about that. That there is an African American gentleman who like shows Klans people the light and actually kind of converts some people over to like not being you know, racist a-holes, you know. But in terms of intelligent people being able, or even non-intelligent people, just people talking about ideas and you know, what's the best way to structure society. I know you're a person who's motivated by good overall. You know, how you get to the good, and like what, how, you know, being able to have the ability to explore what you want to do and what you're best at, you know, that is, especially if you're a tech entrepreneur, America's, you know, one of the best places in the world to do it. And you know, our country's kind of, you know, the best parts of our country kind of built on that in the way.
And what, like, one of my, again, your perspective that you're bringing, like if you took the downtown area, which you and I both advocate, we want the best for what's going on down here. And so like the perspective is that you have a different flavor of people who do business in that kind of a setting. And, you know, you're preserving something that otherwise somebody might come in here and see sort of like that intrinsic value that we're talking about and do a different version of it. Like we'll say you have a movie theater that's been around for 200 years. Mm-hmm. Well, there might be one output that you consider on a movie theater of how much money they can make and how much revenue it can create. If one person looks at it saying, hey, it's a piece of our history and it's a reminder of what we did and which is worth preserving. And I'm thinking like both of them are awesome. I mean, you could have a hybrid where you have a respect for where we've been and something that still has a value in the marketplace. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the benefactor and whatever.
And that's exactly, you know, what I'm motivated to do down at the building. It's like to have a, you don't want to just have a museum in the archaic term of like that, that's kind of like stoic and kind of like dead in a way. You know, you want to have a vibrant, active museum of a space where things evolve, where it's not just, you know, trying to be nostalgic and single-minded about the past, but taking history and involve creating something new. And yeah, like we talked about, downtown Youngstown has always had that, even in the days that people thought nothing was going on down here. It's not true. Things were always going on down here. Places like Cedars and a place called the Bone Hole, which is kind of like an underground art collective back in like the 90s, like kind of just before my time. I never really got to hang out there, but there were some great artists that hung out there. And people making, we talked about before, Chris Strollo made a short film called The Appraiser, which, have you got to see that?
I have not, now.
All right, we should just actually take the whole show one day. If Chris lets us show it, just show that. You know, stream it out there for that, because people need to see it. It was made in 1996. It's only about a half hour long, but it's not just a great, like, little documentary. It's actually a piece of art as well. They do stop motion animation in it. And it's about tearing down buildings down here and, like, what, trying to understand, like, what's the, even the angle. And the best I could come up with to some degree is a lot of these buildings were torn down here just to give the demolition companies the money to do it. Like, you're tearing down invaluable assets, buildings that couldn't be built again today, and it was just so a demolition company could make a couple $100,000 on it, and not even ones that were like even from Youngstown. I mean, it was, and it's still happening today too. You know,
That level of corruption, it breaks my heart that stuff happened around and someone allowed it to be. You know, it just,
yeah, and it's, you know, there's actually some new kind of worrying, some things kind of being rumored about in terms of historic buildings downtown. So we'll keep you updated on that.
All right.
On the show.
So circling back to the humanities and at the university. So if you take programs that you know are hard, having a university harder to keep offering, right? That don't have a connection to the marketplace, because if you have a publicly funded university, then the tax base and the people who fund it sort of has to justify spending.
I've been trying to seriously think of the best, and hopefully maybe our audience can help us with this. I'm trying to think what the humanities equivalent could be, and hopefully something terrible doesn't happen that kind of proves this point. But what I'm thinking about is before 9/11, like there was hardly, I guess there was like not many Arab language programs. And after 9/11, when, you know, started to, I mean, they don't speak Arab in Afghanistan, but in Iraq as well, but there was a need for Arab translation after 9/11. I mean, a critical security need for the country and on multiple levels. I mean, just culturally, we should have a multilingual. I mean, I'm not, so I mean, but hopefully other people are more multilingual. But I'm trying to think of like, what is like the equivalent where there's a need for humanities. And yeah, you could say it's hard to pinpoint, like, yeah, there's a general need, but in terms of specific need for humanities, and I think there are, I haven't found the perfect example yet what could be the equivalent, but yeah, we need it as a society overall, just to have a society valuing humanities. But there's also specific needs where it does not only serve the marketplace, but
All right, well, let's change it so that universities are too connected to that, you know, the profession, but let's take like high schools, all right, and school boards justifying music programs.
Yeah.
That kind of
that's they are oftentimes the first on the cutting bracket, but on the cutting block, but they're absolutely necessary in terms of, there are some kids who might seem have disabilities. I like to call them variables. I don't like the word disability, but you could say that have like different forms of learning disabilities where music is the one thing that clicks with them. I mean, I think there's, I can't say specifically like composers and but I know there's stories of like composers where, you know, I mean, a lot of people on the spectrum as well, like they may not be able to socially, you know, social interaction and classroom learning may be difficult for them, but music is a language and it really is a universal language, which Sun Ra is really cool if anyone's ever heard of Sun Ra. But if music is literally a universal language beyond humanity that makes sense in, even in nature and stuff. So it is a form of processing information and learning that some kids need, like literally like need to flourish. So yeah, and it benefits everyone regardless, you know. So yeah, you can't just cut the humanities, you
okay
know?
So let's kind of like the innovation curve. So if I had a business and I was looking at like the sheet of revenue or sales, right? Mm-hmm. And I have like a couple items at the bottom that don't have interest and nobody's buying any of that stuff, and it's holding up my inventory to be able to expand and add new products to the list because I've got these bottom underperformers where nobody's requesting them, nobody's buying them, and they're just kind of taking up space. So if a university or a school had something that the public really didn't support and their kids really didn't have much interest, even if there were a couple of people that would buy my garment that weren't, mm-hmm. wasn't really popular, is that staving off the expansion of things that could have an interest because you're holding on to something that doesn't have any interest?
I did just think of another example.
Oh, good,
like a
good
meme going around, like that was especially going around during quarantine or something. Like, if you don't think ours have values, how many people during quarantine, you know, watch movies, read books, you know, finally rediscovered reading, a lot of people, you know. So there was
a change. Yeah, nice.
So yeah, try doing those things without artists, you know, right. Yeah, people need them. So in terms of universities, yeah, the big thing now is like classroom count, you know, and how many students are in your class. So yeah, I think our society, in terms of Youngstown, yeah, we're advocating that YSU doesn't cut these humanities programs, but also we as a community, we have a role to make sure that kids know that it's an option and are how you introduce them to it so that they then do go to YSU and enroll those classes. Because yeah, at the end of the day, you need to have students in seats in order to have, you know, someone teach it.
But yeah. And my, when you start talking about this stuff, if there were people that were sitting on the couch that weren't taking these classes for whatever reason, I hope the discussion says, if it's important to you to keep those things intact, that you show interest and go buy that stuff. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
And that's one main reason that I was thinking about like what we're going to talk about today. I figured that's why it would be a good time to talk about.
Give me an example of what the humanities that they're thinking of cutting. Like when
like
we say humanities,
American studies, masters is being cut. Which I really like because it's a combination kind of history and culture, you know, that Dr. Lou Zona from the Butler taught classes for the American Studies program as well. But also the Steele Museum, Dr. Tom Leary at the Steele Museum. So it's like, and that's what I love about Youngstown is we are the perfect blend of that. We're a city right. of both grit and culture. We're a city of the steel mills and the Butler Institute of American Art. And that's what I'm really proud, too, of how the show with Maple Turner turned out last Friday, too. Maple worked in the steel mill, and he's also an international artist. And I'm really, really happy and thankful for everyone who made that show a success on Friday, because it was a perfect evening. And it was you know, the buildings got grit, but also Maple, you know, brought culture to that building too.
Yeah, give us the update, because I didn't hear how it turned out. So give us a little picture.
Trina Williams and the Mocha House did an amazing job with the catering. It was fantastic. You know, we had some champagne and wine that was real good. And Dave Lynn Trio performed, and Mark Lee Pringle really had it was fantastic. It was the Quailing Dragon, and it was two people in this like Chinese dragon costume, and someone playing the big drums, and someone with the mask on to kind of look like Devo's bougie boy. That was kind of like it was wild. And the dragon coiled around, and it put its head in the slop bucket and filled its mouth up, and then vomited candy over everyone.
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah. And it cleared out all the negative energy, said Mark Lee Pringle. Said it clears out negative energy. And okay. So sure it did. Yeah. Ready. He said usually it's for the new year, but it's for any special occasion.
Okay.
And it did. You know, it was, that was awesome.
Well, I will tell you, I really appreciate what you do to facilitate stuff like that from happening. So the part that you play in pulling stuff like that off, thank you very much from all of us.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it's I love doing it. And you know, at times I got kind of pessimistic and jaded over the past 10 years, because it is tough a lot of times. But I'm glad, you know, Maple's someone who, you know, in a way I can't say no to, you know, that he wants to do a show, like, all right, yeah, let's do it. And you know, it's been tough, especially going to school and putting that on at the same time. But it really was awesome. I'm really thankful to Maple for one, bringing it, but also kind of like pushing me to bring every time we do a show, you know, he kind of forced me to take the building to the next level. And I think we did for this show, and I'm really happy with how it turned out. But yeah, talking about the humanities, I guess theater, the Bliss is a different, but it still shows the same point of the theater program at YSU. You know, after the steel mills closed, Maple went in, got a scholarship to do theater and fashion design at YSU. So, I mean, it paid off, and he got into Parsons and City College, and he brought that Youngstown culture to the world and then brought the world back to Youngstown away with what he learned in New York and Paris and places. So yeah, for both students and also, like I was saying, for faculty, like I think we really need to appreciate the faculty that we have here. I know that's, you know, I got both my undergraduate and getting my master's at YSU, and it's the faculty that makes it, you know, the professors having up there, Dr. Polanyi, Dr. Bonham, and at least in the history department, people like that, Dr. Ayana, you know, they made all the difference in my education. And if we start cutting these programs and, you know, we start just hiring just basic adjunct professors, that don't have, the skill and knowledge that these, you know, tenured professors do, you know, then we lose a lot both in the classroom and in the community.
Yeah. And that's, I think we're lucky that we are able to retain some of this talent here, because I mean, they could make a living probably bigger than that in bigger markets, and still they decide to stay here and teach the next generation. So I guess that would be, again, that loss would be something you got to calculate in there too, that if you got skill sets that are leaving the area, what are you left with when they're gone?
Absolutely. Yeah. And they make an impact, and a literal impact on the community. Well, let Youngstown, who did that, English literature conference down here, they're also working on a mural on Andrews Avenue, which they're doing that, I think, in conjunction with the McDonough and some of the art students down there. But it's awesome. Have you seen it?
Like
down
by where? No, I haven't.
If you go down Andrews Avenue along Crab Creek, where sorry, I didn't mean to slip in there. No, my grandpappy, he used to dig those crawfish out of Crab Creek.
All right.
Back in the day. No, seriously though, on Andrews Avenue, it's really awesome, right across from where Penguin, well, you got Flea right there, and then Penguin's right across the street from where they're doing their new facility there, and then you got Brylex. But all along there, there's this big retaining wall, and then you got Mount Carmel up on the hill. There's this big retaining wall that's always been just, you know, drab, blank concrete, and they're doing this really awesome mural. It looks fantastic.
I'll have to check it out. I've never even looked across there.
That's... Yeah, drive by.
Yeah.
Andrews Avenue, it's a neat road, and kind of takes you, like I said, it's along Crab Creek, and so it's like in its own valley, so you're kind of like, it's an interesting way to go out to like Hubbard and, up Trumbull County that way.
Yeah. My uncle had an auto repair shop over there, a Dutch Auto Body. So I kind of grew up as a kid helping out, but
Which side of the family on the Danny side or?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm related too.
Yeah. There
we're
you
like,
go.
What we determine, like we're third cousins or something.
Yeah.
Like that? Yeah.
In the family.
Yeah. It's really cool. I guess our great, great, great something grandfather, I guess, Hungarian immigrant, worked in the coal mines near Connellsville, which I learned more about that at through the Applied History program. We did a coke oven project, and I went out to Shof, which I guess he worked near there back in the day before he came to Niles, Ohio. And so that's where our mutual great-grandparents
came
through.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
That is, the history is so cool. This area is so cool for that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And just like, yeah, that's what's cool about being a small community of like kind of immigrants too. And like, we're all kind of entwined somehow, you know?
Right. Yeah. Right. So in the future, what do we got guest-wise coming up? I was looking forward to the martinis because I wanted to talk about the stuff that you have over in your building, especially Funny Farm Comedy Club. I mean, I got
to have Dave Robichon too sometime.
For sure.
Yeah, Dave's really cool and, you know, great history with Funny Farm. You know, back in the day up at the Metroplex, and that was a large facility. That's larger than, you know, the third floor where we do now. But, man, that was crazy back in the 90s up there. And now he's brought it back to my building. We've had some great shows on the third floor. And then hopefully once I get the second floor completely finished, then we'll have larger capacity there for shows too.
What's seating like in that? Because I went to the Basil comedy
show. Oh, you were there?
I was there.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know you were there. Yeah. I was running around that night to bartend a wedding too.
Okay.
And, but yeah, how'd you enjoy yourself?
Oh, so good.
Oh, cool.
So good. Yeah. The place was very intimate. Very, you know, the way that you guys got situated in there, it was very, very nicely done.
Thank you. Yeah, that was a big turnaround between doing Maple Friday night and then having Basil there Saturday night. So yeah, I had to move stuff.
Yeah,
around.
I kind of peeked in on what you had on the second floor there.
Oh,
and
did
it
you
was,
get to? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was something.
It's beautifully set
Thank
up.
Thank you. Yeah. So. I'll give you an updated tour again soon.
There
yeah.
we go.
Cool. Well, yeah, hopefully we have some new guests next week and definitely want to get Trina and Dan back on. And yeah, if anybody else, you know, watching wants to come and chit chat, you know.
Beautiful. Sure
everybody's got something interesting to say, you know.
Cool. All right, Jacob. Thank
Thanks,
you so much.
Joe.
Appreciate it.
Yeah.